You would think that when Arsenal get Saka back, that they will go on a bit of a run and they'll maybe eclipse them. It's almost kind of hard to see them finishing below Manchester City now.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
US Sport
on Off the Ball
with 888 Casino, 18+ eGamblingCare.ie.
Well, 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 we have a Super Bowl and it's a very familiar one, Keane Fatty, because you can take a lot of things for granted in this world: death, taxes, and the Kansas City Chiefs making a Super Bowl.
I think at this point, stage, we can also just say Patrick Mahomes making a Super Bowl. Look. Ultimately, I was thinking about this morning, and I was thinking about it last night as the bags under my eyes were growing, and I was half staying awake trying to watch the end of that game. They are the two best teams in the league this year, right? That's fair to say. Like, the Chiefs were the number one seed in the AFC, as much as we criticised them the whole way through. And while the Eagles weren't the number one seed in the NFC, we did talk about this before the season, that the Lions were going to be a little bit misleading because of the way their schedule was and all the games were indoors. So, realistically, like, maybe there's one or two results that either way. Obviously, I was all in on getting Jaden Daniels to the Super Bowl. That's all I wanted. But this is the right game. This is the right matchup. These are the two best teams in the league, I think.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I think there's arguments about the Lions if they didn't get such decimating injuries on defense, whether they would have set up. But the Eagles are certainly very, very worthy Super Bowl contenders from the NFC side. In what was a fairly weak NFC, I think we all agreed throughout the year, the Eagles were, once they got those kind of early 3-4 week wobbles out of the way, have been really, really impressive. But on the Chiefs side, I think it's arguable to say that across the course of the season, gameplay, even the games within the playoffs, that the Bills, the Ravens and themselves are pretty much on a level. And the difference ultimately is that, you know, I talked last week a little bit about the Kilkenny Tip rivalry aping this Bills Chiefs rivalry. Every game they had was a classic. Every game, you know, was really, really close. There was a sense that they were each other's great rival. But if you take that 2010 All-Ireland final out, which stopped the five in a row, and we might not be there yet for the Chiefs-Bills rivalry, Kilkenny won them all. You know, and these teams have played something like 6 times in the last 5 years, and there's a 5-point differential between them over that time, which is insane. But the Chiefs are 4-0 in the playoffs. And even last night, it's 3 points. But the difference is Andy Reid is that level above everybody else, and Patrick Mahomes is that level above everybody else, even greats like Josh Allen and Lamar and so on.
Andy Reid in particular deserves a mention there, because when they were trying to run the clock out at the end of the game, now I'm going to say this as well, as the defense for the Chiefs made so many great plays, you can't overlook them. But it was really notable at the end of the game when you're in that situation of, right, we need this first down because this is a 3-point lead, but let's make it comfortable. Let's not make this a situation where Josh Allen has 50 seconds or Josh Allen has 1 minute 40 seconds, because they actually have to run out the clock essentially twice, or to get a first down to get rid of the clock twice, because the running back went out of bounds on the first time they got the first down. But Andy Reid's influence there, because the plays he called, the setup to get to those situations, like the second down bootleg throw from Mahomes to Pacheco in the flat that got the first down, and then the second play call, it's one of these things where it's just masterful bit of play from Andy Reid, where he hasn't used this concept in a while, or he hasn't done this specific thing in a while, and he breaks it out at a point when their defense isn't expecting it. So they had a triple bunch on the right side, 3 receivers, but 2 of the receivers never settled. They immediately went in motion to the other side of the field and created a triple bunch on the opposite side. So suddenly the defense is like, oh my God, no, the ball's gone there, the ball's gone there, the ball's gone there. Everyone alert to that. And they don't go there. All those receivers run right back to the opposite side of the field, pull the whole defense that way, and the running back just leaks out into the flat, and it's a short, simple throw from Mahomes, but he's wide open for the first down. And it was just a reminder. Now, obviously, that was at a point in the game when they already had the lead, and it was to run the clock out. That's not the most significant thing that happened in that game. But it was a reminder that when it comes down to the minor details, when it comes down to the small margins that these games have been decided on, Andy Reid, and Mahomes obviously is a big part of it, but Andy Reid, I think even more so than Mahomes, he is such a decisive factor in it, because he's paying attention to every single detail without losing the forest through the trees. He's not focused on too many of the smaller things. He's understanding how to use those smaller things to get the bigger picture in favor of his offense and in favor of his team. And to be honest with you, I've probably said they haven't been that much fun to watch over the course of this season. Yeah. I thought they were a lot of fun to watch last night. I thought it was a very different version of the team.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it's something that consistently fascinates me, the fine margins in, like, sports with as many variables as field sports, and in particular American football, and how many things can go wrong, and how many bounces of the ball, and how many fumbles can drop one way or the other, that a team can so consistently overcome those fine margins and win 17 of, they've won 17 one score games in a row now. You know, like, that's it. Oh, sorry, that probably needs explanation. Of games that finished within one score that the Chiefs have been involved in, they have won the last 17. That's amazing. You know, but even take it to going to 5 Super Bowls in 6 years, to being that 6 year, an AFC Championship game that was against Joe Burrow and the Bengals, that was weird, I think you could probably say, but unlucky, you know, is probably at least an accurate way of putting it. The year before they started this dynasty, they lost to the Patriots in, you know, one in a million call of a D Ford offside that shouldn't have happened. They should have won that game. This is a guy who has lost 3 playoff games in his career, 2 AFC playoff games, and, you know, it all comes, never have they, they're probably at this stage, if they win 3 in a row, they will be, but even at this stage already, with the amount of Super Bowls have been, they're probably the best dynasty in the history of the game in terms of results, and yet they've never been a team that you expect to go out and win and go 17-0 and win every game by 20 points. They've never been that. It's always the fine margins. It's a fascinating thing.
But the beauty of that as well is, like, we're going to talk about the fine margins today. It was another one-score game. But they did not get the bounce of the ball yesterday at all.
No, yeah.
Like, there was 4 fumbles for the Bills, and they recovered all of them. Like, people who aren't as nerdy as me won't have paid attention to all this, but over the last 20 or 30 years, there's been so many analytics in the NFL. And one of the things that every single one of these analytics people agrees on is whoever recovers the fumble is completely random. It's got nothing to do with skill level. Obviously, there's an element of work ethic and alertness to the players and people making the effort to get it. But because of the way the ball bounces, because of the way fumbles happen, it's completely random. So for you to get 4 in a row go your way and then still come out on the wrong side of a one-score game. Also, when you add in 2 dropped interceptions at the very start, like, this game could have been very, very comfortable for the Chiefs, but it ultimately wasn't. You've got to give, like, as we're talking about these small margins again, I mentioned the defense previously.
Yeah.
Those 4th-and-1s, those 3rd-and-1s, those 3rd-and-2s, 4th-and-2s, those have been basically automatic for the Bills all year long. And suddenly the Chiefs are there and it's like Chris Jones is breaking the middle of the defense and being the dominant player that he is. I feel like Chris Jones, we don't talk about enough because,
yeah,
like, remember back in the day, we had Eli Manning there, and it was like, all right, Eli, surely the regular season is going to be crap, but no one wants to face him in the playoffs, and he just turns it on in the playoffs. Now, Chris Jones isn't crap in the regular season. That's not what I'm saying. But he always goes to another level. He is Mahomes on that side of the ball, and the Chiefs just happen to have both of those guys because he's, like, he's a defensive tackle, but he's not a defensive tackle. He's like what Calais Campbell was back in the day. You put him anywhere, he's going to make plays no matter what he does. And he, again, just showed up in big moments last night. And you kind of felt bad for the Bills on occasions because they were going to something that should work in theory. You've got Josh Allen, you're going 4th-and-1, and you're just getting bodies going forward. Now, I'm the biggest hater of these plays because I find them boring to watch. I don't know who's excited about watching plays where you can't even see the ball or where the ball stops in the play, but they do work. So you felt kind of bad for the Bills that they didn't. It was like, all right, this is what we'll do in this situation. This is what we'll do in this situation. And the Chiefs are just like, nope, we're the one team all year who's going to be able to stop this somehow, even though it's all just bodies jumping into each other. And there was great examples of that, obviously, from the other game with the Eagles and Commanders, which became a bit of a farce.
Yeah, like, we should talk about that in a minute. Maybe we won't go game by game, we might go team by team. But first of all, you've made me feel very old by describing Calais Campbell as back in the day.
He's still playing.
He's with the Dolphins, isn't he? He was the one who got pulled up beside
Tariq.
Beside Tariq on the side of the highway. Yeah. But you've made me lose my train of thought there with that Calais Campbell thing. But no, the one thing about Chris Jones is worth mentioning as well. I think from a viewer's point of view and from an idea of us looking at this as the dynasty I mentioned them being, you know, there's a lot of turnover in NFL teams. And I think it's important that the defensive leader, as well as a Mahomes type, remains kind of consistent as well. So when we look back on these teams over the years, and we will think of Andy Reid, we will think of Patrick Mahomes, and hopefully, you know, we will also think of Chris Jones because he deserves to be mentioned up there with them.
It's that, was it America's Team it was called? Do they still do them?
America's
NFL,
Game.
Remember they make them,
America's Game, game yeah. One of the greatest.
People,
yeah,
they have
yeah,
the three
yeah.
people. Yeah.
They shouldn't so, make them the year like, off, though. They should have a 10-year window at least for a bit of perspective.
Although if you're the Chiefs, you kind of have to make them a year off because it's out of date. 12 months later, you've got another one to make.
Well, that's the whole point. Yeah, yeah.
you mentioned previous dynasties because now the Super Bowl is going to be for a dynasty because you're going to be the first team to ever win three in a row. But like obviously everyone thinks back to the Patriots in the early 2000s as the most recent dynasty. And correct me if I'm mistaken, Richard Seymour was on all of those teams, wasn't he? If he wasn't, defensive lineman
of the Pats,
there. Super Bowl.
The six of them? Or the three in the early 2000s?
The initial three.
There was nobody... Oh, sorry, the initial three would have had Seymour, yeah, for all of them. It would have had... Teddy Bruschi, it would have had Vrabel, the new coach.
Wilfork
was drafted in the year they won the Super Bowl against the Eagles, yeah. So he didn't win until the last one. Yeah, so there was maybe four or five actually. There was a decent run, and then Devin McCourty would have been kind of the mainstay in the defense, and maybe with Dante Hightower for the latter three,
later
the
years.
Three and five yeah. years that they won afterwards. Yeah.
But they also had Michael Bennett on the team as well at different stages, I think, or that might have been afterwards. Either way, the larger point here is I don't think it's a coincidence that these teams always have like a defensive leader, but not just a defensive leader, someone within that defensive front on that defensive line. Because yeah. you just need those plays to come from there. If you don't have that one singular guy like Chris Jones, although, by the way, George Karlaftis was making amazing plays last night as well. Mm-hmm. Like they have Charles Omenihu was there. He's fantastic too on the edge. Like they have high quality across the board. They're a Super Bowl team, of course they do. Chris Jones is just the one who stands out. But I feel like these defensive linemen, they're so important to get right. And it kind of brings us back to the Eagles here because the Eagles have invested so much over the years on defensive linemen. They've built this team essentially on the two trenches, and the defensive line was the one they had to build after the offensive line. And when you have those guys on the interior, it just sets a tone and changes the way the offense has to play. And that's kind of what you saw last night. The Bills, we talked about the Bills coming into the year and how limited they were weapon-wise and how they couldn't really adjust. And they're plus 24 in the season in the turnover margin, which is unsustainable for the most part. But last night, even when they needed to make plays, like Matt Collins made a few, had two deep catches, one right down the middle of the field that split the safeties. That was fantastic. But overall, they were just lacking those weapons, weren't they? Because like yeah. Amari Cooper's a shadow of himself. So when you're forced into these situations where James Cook, who was great as well, like he's running into these brick walls and Josh Allen's running into these brick walls, it just became kind of too easy for the Chiefs on defense, even while acknowledging it was still only a 3-point game at the end of the game.
Yeah. Can I ask you actually just, let's go off topic just for a second, because I think this is one of those things that some of us watch these things on a little slightly different level to other people. And I think it's worked for a largely Irish audience to talk about this, right? There is a sexiness to an edge rusher, to someone who plays on the edge. There is, though. Like, I mean, okay, to the idea of, okay, maybe. Don't be coming at me with your grotesque thought system. You know that we're talking here on the show a few weeks ago about like Will Anderson. Like, we talk about JJ Watt. We talk about TJ Watt, whatever. You know, these are the guys who get to the quarterback, and that is exciting. But if you actually think of, I wonder, do we give enough credit? Because you see that what happened to Washington when they lost their run stuffer yesterday. You know what I mean? And you talk about the amount of work and the every play importance of the interior defensive lineman that maybe in the general casual audience, I think teams give it enough credit and I think the expert media give them enough credit. But do we as casual fans place enough importance on how massive it is to have an interior lineman who is going to make every tackle, he's going to stop the run, and he's going to get to the quarterback on occasion as well?
So it comes down to two things, essentially. And the first one is, it's very simple terms. If you're an NFL team, you can run the ball. It's not very difficult to run the ball. Passing the ball is a little bit more difficult. And the aspect of passing the ball, where you throw it downfield, the receiver can always drop that pass. Whereas it's very unlikely for your quarterback to be fumble the ball if he's handing it off to the running back. So if you can run right up the middle over and over again against the defensive line that can't stop that, you'll just do that all game and you won't have to worry about drops. You won't have to worry about interceptions and it just becomes too easy. And then the defense will overcommit to that and you'll adjust by throwing the ball over their heads. That gets a little bit further into the details of it. But defensive tackles impact the game far more than defensive ends because they're a bigger part of stopping the run. But also because as a quarterback, it's very, very difficult to adjust to interior pressure. the way it is to adjust to edge pressure. If we go back to the very first play of the Washington Philadelphia game yesterday, Josh Sweat tears off the edge, goes right through the left tackle. Jaden Daniels senses him coming, feels it from over, looks, has a quick look over his shoulder, then steps forward, runs through, and escapes into the middle and gets the ball away. I think he gained 2 yards. On
yeah,
a scramble,
he ran
a
scramble for 2 yards.
So the thing is, if you do that, you can make a decisive movement forward. You can still look downfield. Whereas if the pressure is coming in your face, you have to step backwards. You have to step outside. Now, suddenly the whole field shifts with you. Suddenly your receivers have to find a way to be the same side of the field as you. The defensive backs in the backfield are in a better position to jump on the ball, because you stepping backwards means the ball is coming from a deeper spot, but it also means you're not stepping into the ball, into the throw when you're releasing the ball. So now the ball's coming out slower and coming out from a further point away in the field. So everything in these games is very tight margins in terms of windows, in terms of the speed. These athletes are incredible freaks. They're even the guys who look slow to you compared to the superstars in the field. Those guys are like almost Olympian level athletes. So that's the kind of margin for error you're working with. So when you have that little bit of pressure up the middle, and it doesn't even have to be a lot of pressure, just pushing the pocket is what they call it. Once you have that, it disrupts everything. Whereas you can maintain the timing of a play, you can still throw the ball comfortably if a guy gets around your left tackle or gets around your right tackle and you have to step forward and release the ball, or you have to adjust and move slightly to your left and then throw the ball. Whereas you just can't escape from the interior pressure. Best case scenario, normally you can run outside, but that means you're running away from the leverage of your offensive lineman. Mm. Essentially what that means is your offensive linemen are between you and a defender, but when you move outside, suddenly your offensive lineman hasn't changed position, but he's no longer in between you and a defender, so the pressure is instantaneous. And look, you mentioned previous examples there, guys like Chris Jones and JJ Watt and TJ Watt, guys who actually move around the field. That's going to be a massive story for this Super Bowl, because you might have potentially the best ever defensive tackle tandem on the Philadelphia Eagles when it's all said and done, because right now they're very, very young. But here's the thing, Jalen Carter, and now we'll talk about Jalen Carter in greater detail, but the starting point of this is, Sean McCoy was on Fox Sports at the weekend. Now, that's not generally a program you want to pay too much attention to. But Sean McCoy was talking to Aaron Donald, and Aaron Donald said to Sean McCoy, I'm glad to sit back and watch football now. And I wanted to see how long it would take to find someone who could replicate me. And he went, Jalen Carter, that's just as good as me and might even be better. Now, this is Aaron Donald we're talking about. This is similar to talking about how great CJ Stroud was last year, and suddenly Jaden Daniels comes along. It's like, wait, we've gone from one freak superstar to another freak superstar. He jumped over a blocker yesterday. He's a 300-pound, 20-stone-plus guy, and he's just springing over a defender from a standing start. It's insane.
Yeah, he's incredible. And yeah, look, I mean, this is, again, mentioned last week, it's just seeing these games in full sometimes, and just seeing the impact that certain defensive players have on games is actually just a joy to behold, really. And it's one of those things that you necessarily don't want, like 42, 41 games. You want to see some big defensive stops as well, and they've been great. We'll go team by team. So we'll start with the winner. So I want to talk about the Eagles, but just one more thing on the Chiefs, right? We haven't talked about too many specifics of their offense and of Mahomes. Like, Mahomes did, I would say, everything right last night without doing much spectacularly, and that's what he needs to do, and that's what you would expect him to do. There's no knock on that. But Kelce had a quiet game, wasn't really massively involved in it. They didn't really get the running game going. Pacheco, I think, only had like yards in the 20s, I think, you know. But Wordy is a much bigger part of that offense now as the season has gone on, as the playoffs has gone on. That's looking like a decent first round pick that they've made. Hollywood Brown, you know, a usual weird performance of, like, you know, a few brain farts in there, but getting himself a little bit more involved. They have a lot of options on offense. It wouldn't surprise you for them to go out with a completely different game plan in the Super Bowl, get the tight end more involved, lean on the running game a little bit more. I'm not saying even specifically against the Eagles. I'm just saying they seem to be able to do an awful lot, and that's the beauty of having an offensive genius as your head coach. And probably, you know, we're starting to talk about best quarterback of all time at QB.
It was a very surprising performance on the Chiefs' offense, wasn't it? Because they were relying on those wide receivers more. You mentioned there, Kelce didn't have a big game. The running backs didn't have big games. Mahomes kind of didn't have a big game, but he made the plays he needed to make. Early in the game, like, Juju Smith-Schuster caught a ball over the middle. Before that, Marquise Brown caught a couple of passes on short slants, and was like, oh, that's opening up the offense a little bit. That's really nice for them. They're able to attack the middle of the field, which is a big important thing, because it just opens everything up. The Bills can't come forward all the time. Blah, 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 blah. But then Juju Smith-Schuster caught a phenomenal pass from Mahomes where he fit the ball over a linebacker, and he was one-on-one with DeMar Hamlin, and you're thinking, all right, it's Juju Smith-Schuster. He hasn't been able to run for the last 6 years. he's just going to go down here. We'll get 20 yards, 15 yards, whatever it was. And he sidesteps Damar Hamlin. And you're kind of going, what? Juju hasn't done that since he was a Steeler. Like, he did that and continued downfield for another 15 yards. And I was thinking at the time, if that's happening to you in the first drive, this is going to be an ugly game. No, it didn't turn out like that. But Juju got another ball in, I think, the third quarter, where he's over the middle. Defender comes to hit him, and you're thinking, right, this is who Juju is now. He catches the ball, goes down, and that's it. And he dips underneath the tackle, sheds the tackle, runs it down the left side, down the right sideline after coming across the field. And you're kind of going, where's this guy been all year? Where's this guy been for the last 3 or 4 years? And then the other aspect of the offense that was fascinating to me, because look, I came into the season not laughing at it because I've learned my lesson with Andy Reid. The Chiefs drafted a wide receiver there who didn't know how to catch the ball, run routes, or basically play football. He was just really, really fast. I did not think he had this performance in him. Now, he wasn't spectacular. It wasn't Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase. Mm. But you look at that early catch in the game, the contested catch where they're talking about, oh, the ball moved and all that kind of stuff. And that, we can get into that, but I don't really think there's any worthwhile getting into it. I thought it was a good catch and it was fair. But he used the size there. He fought for the ball, showed really great ball skills. The touchdown he catches early on in the game, he runs his route crisp. He gets outside quickly so he can turn the corner and get to the pylon. He made a couple other plays in the game as well where it was like, oh, he's starting to really look like a proper NFL receiver, which is scary for the rest of us, because if Andy Reid gets another year or two with him, he might have another Tyreek Hill with him, and he might have Tyreek Hill back with him by the sounds of it coming out of Miami with the way he's talking. So the receivers there took a step forward without Rashee Rice on the field, without Kelce making a big impact. And if you had asked me before the game and you said, oh, the Chiefs are going to win, tell me the game plan, the script of this, how this is going to play out, last on my list would have been, oh yeah, the wide receiver is going to make lots of plays. Because they just don't. They haven't done all year. I would have bet on Noah Gray to make those plays before I would have bet on Juju Smith-Schuster. Noah Gray is a backup blocking tight end who I'm pretty sure is injured right now.
Okay, the Eagles. Saquon did the business in the first few minutes. They didn't really need him much after that. I was seeing him massaging his calf, which I think would worry Eagles fans, especially given he wasn't used even when they had a lead the entire time. But Jalen Hurts, you know, we're going to talk about the defense, and look, we will come on to Washington and all, because I think the scoreline board is unfair, really, on the game itself. But Jalen Hurts looked like the Jalen Hurts of 3 years ago for the first time in that period last night. And I think I can't even see a case that it was like, yeah, but this went for him or this went for him. He actually just looked like the good quarterback we thought he was when they made the Super Bowl that time.
Yeah, the safe and refined quarterback who makes the plays you expect him to make, doesn't really go above and beyond, but also ran the ball really well. The touchdown he got felt inevitable in the second half, where that kind of sealed the game off for them.
But I suppose my point on that, Keane, sorry to interrupt, it's that he doesn't actually need to be even a superstar quarterback. It's what you see in when he has a competent performance that's confident as well as competent. You see that, Jesus, like, they've got A.J. Brown on the field. They've got Devontae Smith as their number two receiver. These are good receivers that we've barely seen this season. You know, it's like as if they're not really even part of the team, because it's just been the Saquon show and Hurts running for 5 yards or getting quarterback sneaks. It's you see them as such more of a rounded offense when Hurts is that little bit more confident and is throwing the ball.
And that's kind of the fascinating aspect of Hurts, because he makes some very difficult throws outside to A.J. Brown, to Devonta Smith. Devonta Smith caught one early in the game in the sideline where he was toe-tapping, but that was a really good throw too, even though it looked like it wasn't because of the way the ball was caught. So like the talent is there, and I feel like he played in that game similar to how he played in the previous Super Bowl, where he was very, very good and he deserved a lot of credit for it. And ultimately, it didn't work out for the end because he was playing against that freak from the other planet. But Hurts' ability to reach that level, they only need him to do it one more time, because I think Eagles fans going into this game, like, you know the way in this day and age, social media is everything. You'll see so many combined teams and you'll see so many this or that or this, or how many players in here would start here. I kind of feel like if you're an Eagles fan, you can almost justifiably go through your full roster and for maybe 18 out of the starting 22 positions, you can go, yeah, we're better there, we're better there, we're better there, we're better there. And all they need is for their quarterback to not be completely outplayed by the guy on the other side of the field. Now, in a normal day, even against a guy as good as Jaden Daniels, that's a reasonable sentence. Against Patrick Mahomes, it's historically proven to never be a reasonable sentence. So I think they're position, I think, because This isn't a situation where the Chiefs are overmatched, or the Chiefs are going to overwhelm them, or they're outmatched everywhere all over the field. The Eagles are comfortably the better team here. They have so much talent, and you saw it yesterday. Saquon Barkley has 4 seconds or whatever it was to score his first 60-plus yard run of the game. And from there, he gets injured, but they just move the ball to other people. They bring in other running backs. Like, the backup running back got hurt well again, I think. And they just went to the third play. Yeah. It was still effective. So it's like, you have all those weapons. You have the offensive line playing well, even without their center yesterday. Cam Jurgens was out. I know Washington were missing their nose tackle, so it was offset a little bit. But the talent, there's just waves and waves and waves of talent. So I think we've got a situation where you've got the best quarterback in the game, probably the best quarterback of all time, and you've got the best team in the game right now. So it's a Super Bowl we've seen before many times, I think. Like, you've seen it previously when actually you'd probably describe this previous matchup from just a few years ago as that, where Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league, the Eagles probably the best roster in the league. I think the Eagles are better now than they were then, but I think I'd probably also argue Mahomes is better now than he was then, even though the numbers probably don't suggest that.
Well, yeah, his just ability to win the games, like we talked about earlier. You've got a coaching probably advantage for the Chiefs as well that I wouldn't overlook, but it is fascinating. And tell me about, like, you said we wanted to talk a bit more about Carter. You know, Zach Bond still having this miracle season in linebacker that, like, you know, nobody saw coming, from a special teams guy at New Orleans to, you know, nearly defensive player of the year at the Eagles. But that's the kind of, you know, that's the front seven that they're facing. How do they match up to Patrick Mahomes with his eyes everywhere and being able to spot little deficiencies here and there? Because that's the fascinating battle, really, isn't it?
Well, the Super Bowl that the Chiefs lost was the Buccaneers, where the defensive line was just able to swarm and overwhelm Mahomes. I think Mahomes was hurt in that game, as far as I remember. He went into it with the ankle injury. Was that the one? Yeah. Like you said previously, they played so many, you get them all confused. But so Andy Reid was limited in how much he could move his quarterback around. I think that's going to be the huge detail of this. There's going to be a lot of moving Mahomes around, just because the offensive line can't work one-on-one against that defensive line. Josh Sweat's explosiveness coming off the edge, you saw it early in the game. Then you saw Carter and I always forget the other defensive tackle's name. Like, he's fantastic, so it's a terrible thing that I keep forgetting it. But the two of them, I think it's Jordan Davis. But the two of them, anyway, they can do everything, and they just bully the people in front of them all the time. So you're not going to be able to line up with Pacheco and run the ball at them. It's going to have to be really intelligent play calling to get to the edges, to work around the outside. I think we'll see a lot of end arounds more. You'll see a lot more of that kind of Andy Reid offense from seasons gone by, where it was quick screens outside, where it was quick throws to the flat. But the problem is, the Eagles have built such an impressive caliber of team, such an aggressive starting 11, I guess, is the way to put it, on the defensive side, that their defensive backs will all make plays. Even rookies there like Cooper DeJean are making plays. But Darius Slay outside is playing probably some of the best football of his career. It's not a place where Andy Reid can come in and go, right, we can attack this part, we can attack this part, we can attack this part. He's got problems to solve and matchups to work around, rather than for him to attack them. Like, they'll figure it out because it's Mahomes and it's because it's Reid. But ultimately, they are kind of, I was going to say they are underdogs, but they're obviously not. But they would, in theory, be underdogs if we were just talking like all positions equal, all impact equal. And part of this comes back as well. Like, Vic Fangio took this defense over coming into this year. Vic Fangio, one of the better defensive coordinators around, and he's historically been very, very good at game planning against difficult opposition as well. But not as good as Steve Spagnuolo. So yes, we have to remember that when we're talking
the Chiefs
about the
defensive coordinator, that is. Yeah. You're right, by the way. Jordan Davis and Milton Williams are the three
defensive
linemen for the Eagles. So, that's the Super Bowl. We'll talk more about it next week, I suppose, and we might get into more specific matchups and so on. And maybe you can name those 18 of the 22 Eagles who are better than the Chiefs. Let's talk about the losing teams then for a few minutes, because it's there's probably wildly different feelings in both cities today. Like, because Buffalo, as I said, like, there's only so long you can be the nearly men, and you can be almost as good as the best team, and you can be the Cork team who lost Munster finals every year, and Mikko will come in and say, we just beat the second best team in the country. And it's not much good to you, because your window's not necessarily closing, but you wanted to talk about cap space, and, you know, the Bills are going to have to rebuild a little bit this year. They're still going to have Josh Allen. They're still going to be competitive. In some ways, we thought that this might have to be a rebuilding season in itself this year. And they had some injuries. They had some receiver issues. and they managed to be good enough, but again, just back to the level they were before. They didn't take that next step.
Yeah, I think we need a new word rather than rebuilding for this. They're restructuring, which is what they do with contracts. So that kind of makes sense.
Okay.
To use that word. They're $6 million over the cap right now, and they can restructure to get under the cap, and like they'll do that fairly easily. Just move pieces around and move contracts around, and it's fine for this year. But how do you catch up from there? Like, you move contracts around, you move money around within the contracts to maintain what you've got, but what you've got is less than the guy you're trying to catch up to. It's less than the Chiefs you're trying to surpass. You're likely losing Mac Collins. You're likely losing Damar Hamlin. You're likely losing Jordan Phillips and Ty Johnson. Now, none of them sound like big names. None of them sound like huge impact players. But this is after losing players the previous year. These were some of the guys who came in to offset that decline, which is essentially what the Bills did. Now, this year, or moving into next year, you've got a 36-year-old Von Miller on your second highest paid salary on the roster. You can get rid of him, but he doesn't actually save you that much money, and he finished the season strong. So if you do move on from him, you're creating a hole that needs to be filled there again. So you've only got a lower draft picks. So it becomes a situation where you can't bottom out, like we said, and it's also just how you catch up to a guy that's already ahead of you and probably has more opportunity to improve and get faster than you. The final aspect of it as well is if you have Amari Cooper there and you traded for Amari Cooper during the season, you were not going all out for this year, but you were really making a strong case for it. And that kind of cost you moving into next year again. And the other thing is, the Bills this year had a plus 24 turnover ratio. Now, that's the biggest in the league by a distance. Essentially, they're plus 1.5 turnovers in every single game. That's not sustainable. That, to me, is not something you do from how good you how well you execute, how cautious you are with your play calling, how smart you are with the ball. That's an abnormality that I don't think is going to repeat itself next year, which all of these signs point to regression. But the other aspect of this is Josh Allen does have that level of talent where he can just get what he needs to get in a lot of games, not playoff games, obviously, but during regular season.
And you think as well, they're in a division that I don't think they're going to be challenged in. I don't see the Dolphins getting any better. The Jets are the Jets, and the Patriots have a long way to go. I think there'll be significant improvement from the Patriots, but not enough to win that division. So you can feel your way into a season a little bit. You know, it's like, and there's a chance of home field in the playoffs then as well. So they've got a few things going for them, but I agree with you. I would just question if, you know, they're just going to be fluttering with the salary cap now from now on in the Josh Allen window. It's just going to be constant low draft picks, trying to be smart and free agency. There's a lot of energy goes into building your roster, doesn't it? And it's like, when are you going to get it better again? You might strike gold one year, you might make a big trade, but like, it has to work out better than Amari Cooper. You know what I mean? It's like, he needs a Justin Jefferson, like, you know what I mean? And it's almost unfair on Josh Allen that he hasn't had, the best he had was probably prime Stephon Diggs, but you know, maybe that was a bit too early in the window as well. So it is confusing. Allen, I think, has got to get criticism. You said earlier that he should receive the same criticism as Lamar. I agree, but I also think that the Lamar criticism is unfair. So I kind of think, I don't know if Josh Allen played a bad game yesterday. It didn't seem it to me. Maybe there was some moments that he could have taken that next step of brilliance. And if you're going to be the guy, then maybe you have to make the guy plays. And he didn't do that, but at the same time, he certainly wasn't at fault.
Yeah, he wasn't the story at all yesterday. I just want to say I'm glad you're the one talking about the Patriots going to be crap again next year. I'll let you get out and put that train.
Don't think I said crap. Yeah,
that's what I heard. I don't know. Listeners can decide what they heard. Just to kind of further on what you were saying there, like when you go to last night, they had a third and goal from the 2 or the 3, I think it was. I can't remember, to be honest with you, if this is one of the ones that they scored on ultimately or not. But it was just a kind of testament of where the two teams were. They put Keon Coleman out wide on a fade route going against Trent McDuffie. In theory, that's a good matchup because Keon Coleman has so much size and height on McDuffie. I know I said size and height there, but size in terms of bulk and then height in terms of to reach above him. So he should be able to bully McDuffie in a sense. But McDuffie's a really, really strong, technical, outstanding cornerback with great ball skills. And Keon Coleman is this big second-round pick who they hoped would be more than what he ever was going to be. And then you're expecting him to go up against a McDuffie and beat him. And that's just not going to happen. You have to get very, very lucky, or you have to be very, very good at your job, like Howie Roseman in Philadelphia, to to identify these guys without having premium draft picks. And even when you're great at it, if you're doing it year after year after year after year, you're just never going to hit that often unless you get a great coach and a great quarterback. And maybe that's where the question is. Maybe it's Sean McDermott's time. And now I'm not the one who calls for him to go. I think he's a very good coach generally. But it might be one of those situations where it's like, look, we both need to freshen this up. You need to go somewhere else. Like Andy Reid went to Kansas City and felt great. And Philadelphia needs someone else just to change things up and change the approach and figure out how we can get over this hump without identifying superstar players or paying over the odds for people we can't afford anyway.
Yeah. Is there an argument their defense could be as strong, if not stronger, next year? There's some injuries there that...
Yeah.
You know, like that should... Like, it could happen again, but you'd like to think it doesn't. So even if they do lose a Hamlin type or one or two of them on defense, they'd be able to replenish pretty easily, I'd imagine.
They're one of those teams where I don't even feel like injuries are that big of a deal to them because they get 11 guys out there who play above average football no matter what. That's a McDermott thing, I'd say, as well. Like that's where his quality comes through. So like if you're comparing this to like the Rams or the Steelers, they kind of rely on a couple of superstar talents. The Bills have Ed Oliver. They have a couple of big-time cornerbacks and safeties and linebackers and defensive linemen. But Ed Oliver is about the only guy there who I would look at and go, he's a superstar. AJ Epenesa is a great example of the type of player they get. Someone who's solid in everything that they do, who's consistent, plays well no matter what you ask him to do, but doesn't really stand out as a star, which helps them keep the team together and stay good over years. But it also means they don't necessarily have the big-time players and the big moments too, you know?
Yeah. Had the same thoughts about McDermott. I was like this morning, even just going like, is that the answer? Is your coach hit a limit that maybe your quarterback has a higher ceiling than your coach? And is that a problem? And then you're thinking to yourself, it's like the teams that are in quarterback limbo. It's like the Dak Prescott people who, like, I've got the eighth best quarterback in the league. He might never win me a Super Bowl, but I'm probably not going to get someone in the top eight if I dump him. So you're just in limbo sometimes because there's not much you can do. Sean McDermott is definitely not the problem, but he might not be the ultimate answer either. So anyway, the Bills are where they are. Washington's a completely different situation, right? So you've got a guy who, like you talked about, turnovers defining everything. To have, I know they ultimately had four, but like while it was still a game, there was three turnovers in that game. And it was 11 points in the difference at the time, I think. And none of them were anything to do with the quarterback. Jaden Daniels did... I don't think he was spectacular, but my God, he had his moments and he did everything that he's been doing all season. He was keeping his team in the game and he was just let down by fumbles and balls falling out or being knocked out by defense and so on. And it was just a killer. And the scoreline, that's what I said earlier, didn't reflect the game. So Washington have this guy. They've got a receiver in McLaurin. They've got load of cap space. And they've also got, like, they still have the remnants of a very badly run franchise there that will, you know, they'll fix that a little bit every year. You know, so you look at, you know, when they started to lose their head late in the first half and conceded two touchdowns in no time, Marshawn Lattimore was just gone. His head was gone. He was fighting AJ Brown all the time. He has been on the wane for 3-4 years. The Saints couldn't wait to get rid of him, having been a good corner. And he was the type of player that Washington picked up when they were, you know, maybe not as smart as they are now. You kind of feel like that stuff, that there's little bits of that all over the team. Maybe that's unfair to say that they've fixed it. I suppose I just think everything's fixed because they've got a great quarterback.
Yeah, well, I had that because I was coming into this thinking the exact same as you, being like, that scoreline was unfair. But then the more I kind of thought about it, and as I was listening to you just now, this thought kind of just popped into my head. Are we only saying that because we're so focused on the quarterback? Because the team as a whole probably deserves to get spanked. You know what I mean? Like the fumbles that they had were
Very easily could have been a one-score game going into the fourth quarter, I suppose, is what I mean, without anything happened differently. So you take out the turnovers and you take out everything else, it would have been a much closer game. It was hard to see from minute one the Eagles not winning that game last night. So I think that's to your point.
Yeah, I think you mean from Saquon Barkley's first touch that game looked like it was over, because the first drive was actually pretty good. Like, to be fair, Jaden Daniels, he elevates that team so much. We probably knew that the Eagles were always going to be so far ahead of them that it was going to be a mountain for them to climb. And you were hoping for it and you were getting the storyline of it as much as you were being factual about it and doing it based on the logic of the two teams. Look, Washington are in such a phenomenal position to get better. like they're bringing back Cliff Kingsbury, which I'm always going to complain about, and I'm going to get a complaint about him in every single episode we do this year, I think, so far, and I'm going to keep that up. But they have $90 million in cap space. The only significant free agents are Bobby Wagner, Zach Ertz, and Jeremy Chin. I think they'll get all of those back with relative ease, and if they don't, they'll probably be able to improve on the likes of Wagner because he is very old. There's lots of free agents out there who make a lot of sense for them. Josh Sweat from the Eagles is going to be a free agent, a defensive end who was coming off the edge at the start of the game. Trey Smith from the Chiefs, he probably won't get away from the Chiefs because they tend to keep their offensive linemen. But if he hits the open market, he would be a great fit there because the Commanders lost their best offensive lineman last week to a torn ACL anyway. But they would have needed Trey Smith anyway with him with or without him. And then finally, T. Higgins, who would be a great complement to Terry McLaurin. So there's a lot of opportunity there for them to go out and get better. They'll have picks again. They haven't traded anything away to get Daniels or anything like that, like other teams have done in the past. So, yeah, look, they've only got reasons to be excited. They've only got reasons to be happy with their year. Of course, it feels like crap today, because especially the way in which they lost the game, and especially with the turnovers that they're going to look back on and be like, why did that happen? We could have avoided that. We could have at least made this a close game at the end, and it didn't happen. But look, no one, if you gave this to the Commanders before the start of the year, everyone would have taken it. Everyone would have been delighted, and they were one step away from the Super Bowl. Like, maybe it's one of those situations where this is the big year and it never gets better from here, but I don't think so. I think that quarterback is on such a level where he'll drag them forward the same way Mahomes has dragged the Chiefs forward.
Yeah, it's not as if he was the final piece of the puzzle. That team is only starting their build, so you would think that Daniels, even if he has a mild year two regression in the way CJ Stroud did, is still going to be just an absolute superstar of the game. So onwards and upwards for Washington. They had an amazing year. You two have had an amazing year talking about the NFL every Monday, Keane, but we do have one more show to do as a Super Bowl preview. We'll do an off-week show next week, and we will get into some of the NFL news that's been going around. We don't really have time now. We're having a few technical difficulties, but there's some new coaches. One of them is a guy you thought was out of the league 5 years. The son of a coach has gone to the Dallas Cowboys, Brian Schottenheimer. We've got a new coach of the Bears. We've got a new coach of the Raiders. All very exciting. We'll get into all the news, and there's probably going to be a lot more of it in the next 7 days as well. We'll have Jer back. So we'll talk to you then, and we'll be back with a big Super Bowl preview.
US Sport.
On Off the Ball.
With 888 Casino. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.